Greetings everyone and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. My name's Angelo Valdivia and with me this week are Oliver Brand.
G'day folks.
Luke Henderson.
Howdy howdy.
And Michael Goncalves.
Hey team.
We've got a great episode lined up for you this week, all about the new Nintendo Switch announcement that's fueled many discussions in the games community. A new Smash contender enters the fray, but not in the way we expected. And we have a discussion around whether or not buying Nintendo products with a defeatist attitude is outstaying its welcome. But let's kick off with a potential solution to Joy-Con drift. So according to a YouTube channel called VK's Channel, that's the name, opening up the Joy-Con controller and slipping around 1 millimeter of paper or cardboard under the analog stick mechanism adds enough pressure to the mechanism to keep the controller from drifting. There's about a 10-minute video where he goes into the ins and outs of what the actual issue is and his experiences with it and some of the tests he's done. And then the latter half of the video is actually the solution itself, where it's really quite simple, but you know it does require work opening up the Joy-Con, which can be a little bit finicky. This isn't the first suggested fix to Joy-Con drift, though. There are a multitude of problems and fixes that people have suggested over the years, but this is one that's really quite exploded over the last week, just for the actual simplicity of what the problem could be and what the fix can then be as well. Do bear in mind, though, that that opening up your controller does void warranty, but for anyone still using, you know, controllers since the launch of the Switch, that's entirely irrelevant because warranty would have ended for you many, many moons ago. So, you know, and if you have Joy-Con that you're not using anymore because of drift, you really have nothing to lose but just crack it open and giving it a shot anyways. Now, I've gone ahead and done this because I have no shyness about just busting open controllers and things like that and tweaking around and trying to fix things. And I've done that with my Joy-Con a couple of times already because I've actually replaced the Joy-Con sticks with other Joy-Con that I have over the years. So just because I want to keep my green and pink ones from Splatoon because I love those Joy-Con so much. But how do you guys feel about this solution? Is this something that you've tried? Have you tried other fixes?
So I've been sort of lucky enough to not develop drift on any of my controllers yet. Not even like my launch day ones. I don't use Joy-Cons all that often though. I've pretty much stuck to using the Hori Split Pad Pro at this point. But like, I think honestly, it's ridiculous that we even have to like have this kind of discussion. Like this has been a problem for like 4.5 years now. Like the fact that we're still talking about Joy-Con drift and there's still no official solution to it other than like sending your controllers in and maybe getting them replaced for free is just like ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, well, he even goes into the video, he discusses like that solution that Nintendo's provided where if you have problems with your Joy-Con and they don't specifically say anything about drift, that, you know, you can send your controllers in for a fix or a replacement. And he's pointed out that people who send in like special edition controllers and things like that, there is a good chance you won't actually get those back. They'll just give you a brand new set of Joy-Con instead. So you can send over an incredibly rare set of Joy-Con and you'll get, you know, a pair of gray ones in return.
I'm much like Ollie. I haven't had drift with my Joy-Con. But, you know, in terms of a solution, if this is the fix for most people, then it is insanely simple. Whether or not it is going to fix the issue, obviously there's a multitude of causes for what might be behind the controller drifting. But, you know, for a simple fix, one that doesn't require any sort of soldering or full-on disassembly of the actual Joy-Con, it's pretty cool.
That's going to sound super set up, but I also haven't had any drifting issues with my Joy-Cons.
That's bonkers. That's so
but
crazy.
I use my Joy-Cons the least out of everything. I use my Pro Controller for pretty much every game I play on the Switch. But yeah, I agree with the sentiment of pretty much everyone here where it's insane that we even have to bring this up and this is still a continued thing. I think it's more insane and very shameful for Nintendo not even admitting that this is a problem. Like, it very much is a problem. Mm. They sweep it under the rug by saying, send in your controller, we'll fix it. But, you know, it'll be under warranty, but not under warranty. Like, they've done everything but say the words, there is a problem. And the most important part is also fix that problem. So, it's just not great. And the fact that you have to, you know, have a random YouTuber make a thing where you just shove a piece of paper in your Joy-Con to fix it, it's just completely stupid.
That's crazy to me that I'm in the minority of Joy-Con drift in this chat. Like, that's absolutely bonkers. I've been experiencing drift for a couple of years now. But, you know,
I was going to say, out of the four of us, you're also the most cynical Nintendo fan. So maybe that's why.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Nintendo,
maybe my negative energy is just
very clear just going second there. I'm probably just behind Angelo being cynical. But for me, it's simply because I don't use them that often. Like, it's a very, very small amount.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It is interesting that Nintendo haven't formally acknowledged that this is a problem. And I think the last time any major hardware defect popped up that the company went, hey, we're sorry, was the Xbox 360 with their Red Ring of Death. Like, in all the things since then, I think, like, nobody's really said
part of
sorry.
The problem, a part of the problem for Nintendo is that, like, the second they say sorry, they're providing ammo to, like, the dozens of class action suits that are happening around the world. So, like, it's a bad idea for them to say sorry from that perspective. But, like, also, just do it. Like, admit fault. Replace the controllers, come up with a new mechanism.
Like, I'm not a litigious person at all, but Nintendo deserves to get sued for this, hands down. It is horrible.
Well, let's also not forget that there have been other problems, glaring issues, to slip a pun in there, with some of their previous consoles as well. I mean, even the Switch, how many people were talking about their Switches scratching because of the dock? Oh. Like, I've actually used my own fix to fix that issue, and I'll go through that later. But even the 3DS, I remember when the 3DS came out, like, after about a year, I noticed that there were all sorts of scratches along the top screen because of the raised little frame around the bottom screen in the lower half of the console. Like, that was completely scratched up. And I'm like, what is going on over there? There are all sorts of issues with a lot of Nintendo consoles that they just don't admit to. But yeah, anyway, so to go back to my scratch fixing solution, what I've done is, and this is a little tip that people can do at home. If you still have your Switch box, or when you unwrap your Switch for the first time or whatever, it comes with that little, like, foam sort of sack that it comes in, that little slip that it comes wrapped up in. If you take that and you cut a long strip, that's only about a centimeter wide, and you stick it on either side of the inside of the Switch dock, like, you use, like, double-sided tape and slip it in that way, and then also at the back, so you have four thin strips, and then you slide your dock in and out. Like, those little foam things will provide a little bit of a buffer there that will be nice and soft against the screen and won't actually scratch it at all. And super simple fix, takes like 5 minutes to do. And it's really, really useful. And I've had mine in there for about 3 years at this point, and they haven't, you know, rubbed out or fallen off or anything like that. It's such an easy fix to do, and I highly recommend doing it. Hey there, listeners. Angelo just quickly jumping in here from the edit room to let you know that if you want to have a look at some photos or a quick little video clip about this solution that I've whipped up for my Switch dock, you can head to my Twitter account at Mangelo. That's MANJELL0 to get some examples there to kind of see what I was talking about. Anyway, back to the show.
I will say that, like, the reports of screen scratching were very much overblown. It has been a very, very small amount of people. And the initial pictures that we got of, like, wow, look at this, like, super scratched screen and all of that. Like, we know now that, like, the big picture that circulated around the time was sort of fabricated by somebody scratching their screens up against the Switch. I don't know why that person did that. But, like,
internet points.
It is a thing that happened. Yeah, pretty much. So, like,
well, I can definitely say from my experiences that it was not me just slipping it in and out.
Oh, yeah, for,
like,
sure.
Frivolously. Like, it was definitely scratching the front and
back. I'm not saying, like, it doesn't happen. I'm just saying that, like, it's not, like, a super widespread issue like the Joy-Con drift is. Like, it does happen for sure, and there's always going to be, like, manufacturing tolerances that can cause that to happen. But, like, it's not like the Joy-Cons where, like, Nintendo needs to address this right away. I think, and we'll get into this when we get into the later topic, but I think the new dock will probably have things in place to prevent that from being an issue for anyone.
I mean, you say that, but like, they could have fixed the Joy-Cons years ago, and all new Joy-Cons have come out, could have fixed that, and they've chosen not to.
They absolutely could have, but, like, that's still the same model that they're still selling now, right? Like, this is a new model of dock. I would imagine that it's going to be not something that's particularly possible on the new dock, but I think we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I guess it will.
Let's get to the next story. So potentially happier news, or more interesting and less negative news surrounding the last couple of weeks, is that Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl has been announced, which is pretty much just a Smash clone, but featuring a lot of Nickelodeon characters. It features characters from SpongeBob SquarePants, Rugrats, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Ren and Stimpy, The Wild Thornberrys, Real Monsters, Hey Arnold, Invader Zim, plus many more. So people who watch, you know, Nickelodeon back in the 90s, like I did, if you're old enough to have lived through that amazing decade, this might appeal to you, and it definitely appeals to someone like me. I think it looks quite fun. It's coming to Switch and other platforms in Q3 2021. This looks super good. I don't know if I'll get on Switch, though, because I thought it was only announced for Switch, and then I went back and checked, and yeah, it's coming out on PS5 and Xbox, and I think I'd much rather get it on something that's going to have a little more robust online play, TBH. But how do you guys feel about this? Is this a game that you're going to be interested in?
I mean, I'll definitely check it out. It looks, like, super cool. Like, yeah, it's like a Smash clone. It's got a ton of awesome characters in it. I really hope the characters from the Avatar series are going to be in it. That's my jam.
I didn't even think of that.
The teaser box art pretty much confirms that that's going to happen. So we may end up with the first good Avatar.
I didn't even think of that. Gee, that's a great idea.
It was Tim Curry that voiced Nigel Thornberry, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Yeah. If he's back to record new dialogue, then I'm in. If it's a sound alike, then I'm not, that's the make or break point
for you. Is like 10 lines of dialogue from a voice actor.
Nigel Thornberry is an iconic character, and if he doesn't sound right, it's not worth the effort.
Sure. Fair enough.
I don't think Tim Curry will be back to voice that. I don't think he's doing a lot better. Yeah, I don't think Tim Curry is not great, unfortunately.
Yeah. No. For me, it's just another Smash clone, and every other game that's done it. I mean, Brawlhalla is probably the most successful Smash style clone that's come out lately. And they've recently doing a lot of tie-ins. So we just had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing in that. They had Kung Fu Panda before then. They've had Walking Dead. I think they had Tomb Raider. They had Lara Croft at one point. They all go, oh yeah, we're offering something different, and it just comes down to how much you like the characters. Because a lot of the mechanics tend to fall short, and if the mechanics aren't behind this one, the players won't be. Regardless of how cool it would be to have, you know, Donatello from the Turtles fight, you know, Invader Zim.
I think a justified comparison is with PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. And man, that game tanked.
That was absolutely
Sony just trying to cash in on something that from a distance resembled Super Smash Brothers. But like the gameplay in that game just felt like complete trash. And like, I don't know. So fighting some character from like Ratchet and Clank as Nathan Drake wasn't really something that was appealing. Like a game like that has to be over the top and silly and fun and goofy and all that kind of stuff. And Smash really toes that line really well. I feel like, you know, Nickelodeon or some other big animation studio or, you know, company or something like that would fill that space quite well. I think something like Nickelodeon could pull it off. But, you know, we'll wait and see. But at the moment, it ticks all the boxes for me, I think.
I think like the most disappointing part is that it means that Nigel Thornberry is not going to be the last Smash character now.
To be fair, he wouldn't be that because the rules, it has to be a character from the game. From games. This is also not the first fighting game for Nickelodeon. They've had a number of them over the years. So whether or not this is going to be different from those, or if it's just going to be like, hey, we already did these fighting games, let's try another one. The other ones have come to mobile as well. So always a bit of a weird thing there. But yeah, I personally, I'm not sold on it, but that's because I'm a fair weather Smash player. I'm not a huge fighting game player myself. So if it has the, you know, a good cast of characters and people are really keen on it, then it could be something fun. But I just think it's going to be another cheap cash in game, which is enough of a reason for me to sort of avoid it.
But as always, I'm sure you're happy to be proven wrong if it comes out and ends up being amazing, right?
Oh, if it's a game of the year thing, then I'm more than happy to be proven wrong. I'm always happy to be proven wrong on any game that I think is going to be there.
A licensed game of the year.
Oh, yeah, there's always a chance. I mean, maybe not in a year where a Metroid's coming out, but you never know.
So I was just looking up the developers, interesting, and this makes a lot of sense. I didn't realize the developer of the game were the same developers who made Slap City, which is pretty much...
I've never heard of that game.
Like a Smash clone. Okay.
Slap City.
The other thing too, Game Mill are also the publisher behind the Nickelodeon kart racing games that also hit Switch and other platforms recently, and also the Cobra Kai fighting game. So they've got a bit of history with licenses.
All right, let's move into the big topic of the week. Nintendo announces the Nintendo Switch parentheses OLED model end parentheses. That is the name of the console. It features a 7-inch OLED screen, replacing the current 6.2-inch screen in the base console while keeping the same form factor and having smaller bezels. So the screen size is roughly about 13% larger without, you know, increasing the size of the console itself. It includes a newer dock with rounded corners, taking the page out of the Apple book, and an Ethernet port. Interestingly enough, it does remove a USB port, though. There is a larger, more reliable kickstand that fills half the back of the console, similar to a Surface Pro. It has more powerful speakers for tabletop gaming. The battery life remains the same. It has an internal storage of 64 gigabytes, which is double that of the 32 in the current Switch model. And it will come in two SKUs, white and the classic red and blue, which only really affects the Joy-Con anyways. And the white affects the new Switch's dock. It'll release on the 8th of October in Australia for $540 at retail. So let's open this one up. Let's unbox it, if you will.
All right, I'll get started because, I mean, I think Angela and I are going to have very different opinions about this, as you would know if you've been in the Discord the past couple of weeks. So, let's start off with the main thing. It's an extraordinarily dumb name. We knew that Nintendo were going to name their next console something just ridiculous, and this is the worst. I don't want to type it. I don't want to say it. I just don't want to interact with this name at all. But more seriously, I am a fan of OLED screens, so this is something that appeals to me, especially because I've been playing more and more handheld lately. But the price point is not great. It definitely should have launched at the price that the original Switch launched at, that $479 or $469, I think it was. And that huge disparity between the classic Switch and this OLED Switch now feels a lot larger in Australia because we're so used to seeing the Redbox Switch at that $399 price point. Like, nobody buys a Switch full price anymore. Nobody's buying at that $469 mark. So that price increase, sure, on paper it's, you know, $70. In reality, it's more like $140, $150. So it's priced quite poorly, I think. But I suppose the counterside to that is that if you don't see any value in what the Switch Pro, the Switch OLED, I almost called it the Switch Pro. Jeez, it is certainly not that. If you don't see any value in what the Switch OLED is offering, that's kind of a good thing because you're not going to be missing out on anything. There's no exclusive games for this. The gameplay experience hasn't materially changed. So I think, you know, you sort of have to balance this. If you already have a Switch, it's probably not worth the upgrade. But if you're buying a new Switch and you can get a good deal on it, I don't see why you wouldn't go for the OLED. It's a superior product in just about every way.
Yeah, I think if this console was announced to be the replacement of the base Switch model, so, you know, they bump $50 to $100 off the retail price of the Switch proper, and they introduce this at the $470 price point or just below that or whatever, would have made the deal so much more appealing for so many people, I feel like announcing it as the replacement model. But adding it as the premium version, get out of town, man. That's such a rip. It's such a disingenuous way to introduce an improvement, a half step improvement that they try to do with many of their consoles through their generations. And granted, there probably will be a Switch Pro still to come, which will again be more expensive if they're bumping up the price of this one so much. And yeah, I agree. It's made worse by the fact that switches can go anywhere between, you know, regularly between like $400 to $430 if you know where to look. So that's already like $70 off the retail price, and $540 in Australia. That's, you know, a markup of by comparison, that's about $100 to $140 extra over the original model that you'd be paying for. And all you'd be getting is an OLED screen, which, you know, have been in game consoles since 2012, you know, using the Vita as an example, and many, 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 many mobile phones. Expanded storage of 32 gigabytes. Hoo-wee. Okay. And like slightly better speakers. Like it's such a rip. Like it's such a slap in the face to people. Like, my goodness. I can't.
I mean, it's like, ridiculous. I don't think I would call it a slap in the face, because like it's not something that you have to buy. Like, it's a more premium model that is an option for people buying a Switch. Like, it doesn't affect you to not buy it, because again, there's no exclusive games or anything. It's just an extra thing that if people are inclined to spend money on it, they can spend money on it. It doesn't like change, like if the Switch Pro isn't coming out this year, then it was never coming out this year anyway. And if it comes out in the future, it was always going to come out. Like, this is ultimately, like, this changes absolutely nothing, apart from the fact that, like, you can now spend more money on a Switch, which, like, you probably shouldn't. Just wait until it's like $470 like the regular Switch is. But I don't know. For me, it's inoffensive at best. It's just another thing that exists out there now. Like, it's not doing any harm to anyone.
I understand that, but the way that they're marketing it, though, like they have marketed every other Switch, I feel like it is very much like them just trying to be like, you know, this is the Switch, you know, you want to get. No, this is the Switch that you want to get. No, this is the Switch that you want to get. And then next year, we're going to have another Switch that people are going to, or that they'll want people to get. It just keeps piling on and on and on, as if like they, and you know, to some extent, it's probably true. Like, they just think that Nintendo owners are made of money and they just want to keep getting as much money out of them. And to some extent, it is true, because people keep buying this stuff. So, and again, we'll get into that in the next topic point. But yeah, Luke, sorry.
I mean, this is definitely not a full step forward, like most people were hoping from the Switch Pro. I made the joke that it's 0.8 of an inch, whereas a foot is usually 12 inches. But I mean, all the improvements that it's doing, so excluding the screen, which is not beneficial to anyone who plays the Switch docked. But, you know, the kickstand is a huge improvement, because let's face it, nobody uses that generic little flimsy thing that they sell for $7.95. On the Nintendo store, if you lose it or break the one that it comes with, and the, you know, the extra storage is cool, but Nintendo, they really need, somebody needs to slap them in around the back of the head and say, hey, you know what, 32 gigabytes, 64 gigabytes, stop doing that stuff. You know, start doing 128 at a minimum now. You know, if Apple no longer do phones in that storage capacity, Nintendo need to stop. But in terms of all the other features that it has, everything is cool. But I don't think it needed to be released as its own now. I think they should have just kept everything for another 12 months until that Pro model comes out, or the Switch 2, whatever happens to be next. It's a mid-generation update that doesn't actually update anything important to the gameplay experience. But that being said, I play a lot of portable stuff when I travel. And I took my Vita on a flight to the US years ago, when I had the OLED model screen, and I was playing Uncharted on that, you know, in the dark on a plane. It was beautiful, so easy to see. So playing Switch, like in that sort of scenario with an OLED screen, yeah, sure. My OLED's already paid off, because I've got constant cash on hand at EB Games. So I'm for people getting the model that suits their budget and their playstyle, but I just don't think this needed to be released at this time, because it's not adding anything to the experience.
I think that's a really good point, that like it probably would have been a better idea to hold on to this OLED Switch until they do have a Pro ready, like from a consumer point of view, because like the backlash that they're getting for this is that it's not the Pro and it's not the enhanced console that people are looking for. So like if they'd held off on announcing this and like, you know, this is the Switch OLED, and that's like the new base model, and then here's the Switch Pro, and like that's an enhanced model. I would have liked to see like an OLED Switch Lite as well, with a screen that is basically the size of the current Switch screen, because the Switch Lite screen is just way too small for a lot of games. So I think that probably would have been better for like the discussion point is if Nintendo had done that, then people would be talking more about, you know, the Switch Pro, and hey, we also get improvements to the base Switch, and that's a great idea. But instead, they've sort of staggered in. I think maybe, you know, there were intentions to announce them at the same time. I couldn't say, but it feels like a classic Nintendo announcement where, like, they haven't really thought out about, like, how people are going to react to it. But, like, I will say, from a business perspective, I mean, this is basically the smartest move they could have made. Just because, you know, this holiday period, there aren't going to be Xboxes on the shelf, there aren't going to be PlayStations on the shelf, because they simply do not have the capacity to manufacture those right now. And they probably won't until, like, the end of the first or middle of the second quarter next year. So the shiny new console that's going to be on shelves at EB Games and JB Hi-Fi and all of these places is going to be the Switch OLED. So they're undoubtedly going to get a ton of sales from that. It also makes the base Switch look more appealing, because the Switch OLED is a higher price, which makes the price of the base Switch look like a better deal. So, I don't know, from a business perspective, it's really great. But, like, if you're a consumer, like, standing back, it's like, well, you know, this doesn't really do anything for me. But, you know, capitalism is going to capitalize.
See, I think like, if I can just quickly jump in, I think that it would have gone over so much better last year if the Switch Lite was announced with an OLED screen and better speakers. That would have made so much more sense, because that is the portable machine. That is the Switch that people can only stare at that screen. If they made that the OLED Switch and the better speakers, it would have made so much more sense. But this, what the hell is this thing? Sure. Anyway, sorry, Luke, please go on.
Oh, no, it was Michael.
Oh, Michael, sorry.
We are the same person. I think if they launched it as just purely a replacement for the current model Switch at the same price point, like, yes, there still would have been people who complained that it's not the Switch Pro. I would have been one of those people for sure, right? But at least people would have been like, you know what? It's just a replacement model. And, like, and that's it. Has these cool new features. It's the same price point. But anyone who's getting a new Switch from now on gets that. And if I want those new features, I can get that. Or I can just hold that for the Pro. Or whatever the hell it's going to be called in the future. But I feel like doing this as another model alongside the current gen Switch at a higher price point, when basically the majority of your customers, hardcore and casual, are screaming for a new model. It's just classically Nintendo tone deaf. Like, I feel like there's someone at Nintendo that went, we're going to do this and all of our fans are going to love it and it's going to be amazing. We're going to get so much great PR and it's going to be wicked. And then this happens, and once again, Nintendo is just like, oh, I don't understand. I don't understand why people hate this. And it just continues to happen with so many of their products and so many of their releases. With the All-Stars and
doing their PR.
not doing like a Zelda collection. Like, there's just so many clear and easy wins for Nintendo so many times, but they just choose not to do them. And that's a part of Nintendo that I don't think anyone in here will ever understand.
Well,
it makes zero sense.
We're starting the transition a little bit, so why don't we just move right into the next discussion point, though, because this touches on all of those things. So, the discussion point is, with a newly announced Switch OLED model announcement and other heavily marketed products that don't feel like substantial experiences or upgrades, is the somewhat defeated statement, well, I'm going to buy it because it's Nintendo, is that really justified today? So, using something like the Switch OLED model instead of a Pro model or 4K model as an example?
Well, I don't think that's was ever justified, like, period, really. Like, yes, that happens a whole ton. I once again, admit I'm 100% that person. I buy the majority of Nintendo stuff. I enjoy a lot of what Nintendo does. And I enjoy personally collecting those games. But I don't think it's ever really justified. I think it's if it's within your means to do so and you are okay doing that, that's fine. Does it give a bad message to Nintendo sometimes? For sure. 100%. But at the same time, looking at the fact that the Nintendo Switch, open parentheses, OLED model, close parentheses, is still not sold out in Australia, I think that's a pretty clear message to Nintendo.
I mean, I think the OLED Switch probably isn't sold out because they have a lot of stock for it. I mean, it's just an OLED slapped onto the existing things that they've been able to build for, you know, throughout the entire pandemic. They could still get those components. It's not like they were affected in any way by, like, the high-end, like, transistor stuff, because Tegras have been floating around and, like, mass-produced in large amounts forever.
I think they
genuinely just do have a large amount.
I wouldn't say that they haven't been affected by that. Like, I reckon all silicon, period, has been affected by that. I wouldn't be surprised if someone does a teardown of the OLED model and looks at some of the components that are in there, and you're probably going to find some substantial differences between this model and the previous model.
Oh, like, for sure. But, like, the main components that would prevent you from launching a product like this is the GPU and the CPU, the Tegra APU. And, like, the fact is that they've been able to stockpile those basically since they started producing the Switch, or at least until since the Redbox model came out. So, like, they've been able to produce as many of those as they possibly can and then use them whenever they need to. There will be other components as well. I think we were talking in the Discord the other day about how, like, one of the big things affecting PS5 production right now is, like, tiny components like display drivers. Yep. And power management chips, and, like, that's less of a concern for Nintendo because they're using the same stuff that phones are generally using. So it's hard to say. I do think that they just will have a large amount of stock, although, you know, I think Christmas sales will be a more solid indicator of the demand of a product than pre-orders will in this particular case.
Just move off on the pre-order thing, but it's sold out in the US, right?
It is sold out in the US.
Like, yeah. That's what I mean. Like, I think, you know, obviously Australia is a different, like, microcosmos compared for, like, for this type of stuff. But it is sold out, like, in the US. And if they're allocating a large amount of units to anywhere, it's the US. So the fact that it's sold out, like, already.
That also comes back to Ollie's point before about how in the US their price is, what, $299 for the base Switch. This is $349. Whereas here, you know, we're forever seeing the Switch at $429, $399, somewhere in there. So if you're looking just at a sticker price, it's, you know, infinitely more expensive. So maybe that's why people aren't buying it here, because, you know, they're so used to seeing a regular Switch at such a cheaper price point.
Yeah, potentially.
This also marks the Switch OLED model as Nintendo's most expensive console, in Australia at least. Just wanted to throw that out there. Hi again, listeners. Angela jumping in from the edit room once more, just to quickly clarify on a point that I just made about the Switch OLED model being the most expensive Nintendo console in Australia. That's not exactly true. What I meant to say was it's the highest in contemporary pricing for Nintendo consoles in Australia. The NES actually is the most expensive console in Australia when adjusted for inflation. Interestingly enough, while doing some research for this episode, I came across a set of graphs by Jared Mawson, who is a former Australian games media person who collated a whole bunch of historical pricings for various console generations throughout the history of the game industry in Australia. And if you wanted to check that out, just to compare different prices of consoles and things like that, just out of interest, I'll have it linked in the episode notes, which you can find in your podcasting app. Anyway, back to the show again.
I think this sort of presupposes that there's a large amount of people that are making purchases without thinking or weighing up those purchases. And I don't think that's necessarily true of most people. Like, we know that the average Switch owner only has 3 games. So, like, the majority of people aren't just, you know, blindly buying stuff. The people that do, and I don't really know that there's that many of them. I mean, there's definitely some. We've seen some people, you know, just buy absolutely everything that Nintendo puts up. The people that do, like, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with it. At the end of the day, like, if you're enjoying the purchases that you make, then that's all that really matters. Like, you know, I have in my notes here, it's, like, similar to sneakerheads who, you know, buy new Nikes just because they're Nikes, or, you know, Apple fans who upgrade their iPhone every single year because it's the new iPhone. Like, we can judge these people, but at the end of the day, if they're happy with their purchases, if they're happy with the money that they're spending and what they're getting out of the experience, I just don't have an issue with it, you know?
I was just saying my thing with this is that with like the Zelda Game and Watch, you know, nobody wanted it. People, you know, you can still buy a Mario Game and Watch today. And there was a big thing, you know, it's going to be a limited thing because it was a Mario. It was celebrating Mario's 35 years, you know, yada, yada, yada. So nobody was expecting that to still be out, you know, come Christmas time. The fact that it's still in shops today and sometimes you can see, you know, on sale. When they announced the Zelda one, most people that I've spoken to just went, really? Why? Well, no, you know, there wasn't an interest that this was something people had to get. And that's sort of tying back to this is like, okay, because Nintendo are announcing it, does this mean I should get it because it's a Nintendo product? And for me, I'm not ordering the Zelda Game & Watch because I bought the Mario one. I looked at it for 5 minutes out of the box, went back in the box, it's on the shelf because I'm not going to play it. It's too small for me to actually play because it is such a tiny thing and I can't hold it for an extended period of time. So I'm now at this point with Nintendo and anyone where if I'm not going to get more than, you know, an hour's use out of it, I'm not going to buy it because I can't justify spending an exorbitant amount of money for a shelf decoration when I can just look at somebody else playing and go, cool, that's fun, move on to something else. That's me.
No, I've definitely been the same. When Amiibo were coming out, after the first couple of waves, I just stopped buying them. I'm just like, I don't need this crap. Like, it's just so much junk just sitting on my shelf now. I used to romanticize the idea of having a big, like, set of shelves of all sorts of, like, you know, gaming memorabilia and stuff. Now, most of that stuff is...
Oh, this is all...
Well, yeah, I know. And I have nothing against people who have that. Like, that's fine. That's completely fine. But I look at my collection, it's literally, like, up... in my wardrobe, just all of us just sitting up there, just away from dust. That's it. I just don't have it out on display. The only things that I really have out on display are the Amiibo itself because there's nowhere else to really put them because I don't have any room up in that shelf anymore. So I don't collect little bits and bobs, like little pieces of junk. I don't get things like limited editions or anything like that because I do find that it is just a huge waste of money. And the point that I was getting at with the topic of discussion here wasn't necessarily to shame people out of buying stuff. It's more like literally like the defeatist attitude. When people have a discussion about anything to do with Nintendo, it usually ends with them saying, oh, well, I'm just going to buy it anyway. Like Nintendo has me, you know, I'm just going to just shut up and take my money kind of attitude. It's not like, you know, they don't specifically say, oh, I'm going to buy this and it's going to look like a nice little piece on my shelf or it's something I'll be really proud of. It's always, oh, Nintendo has my soul. You know, they know I'm just going to waste my money on it. It's like, well, if you're aware of it, then you don't have to sort of be that problem. Like you're in control of that. Nintendo isn't at your house physically taking the money out of your wallet. Like you make the conscious decision.
Have you seen those Wii commercials?
Yeah, where they come in.
You don't know who's in my house.
That's true.
I was saying, like, I'm not sure if that's like always necessarily defeatist as much as it is, like, in my case in particular. Like, I joke about throwing cash at Nintendo indiscriminately. But, like, that's not something I actually do. Like, I'll say, oh, you know, I'll buy it anyway because it's Nintendo. But, like, I haven't bought an Amiibo in, like, 3 years. You know, I bought orange and purple Joy-Cons because those are my two favorite colors. And I haven't bought any Joy-Cons since then. I got the Monster Hunter Pro Controller, and I will say that was an impulse purchase. That was me just saying, like, hell yeah, throw my money behind that. But, like, I joke about it a lot, and I say, you know, I'll buy it anyway because it's Nintendo. But, like, I don't really buy a lot of Nintendo stuff. So it's just, like, I don't know. I don't know if that's true of everybody that says that. I'm sure there definitely are some people who are, like, sort of use that defeatist, well, it's Nintendo, so I'll buy it anyway. But I don't know. I don't know exactly how widespread that is because, you know, just from personal experience, I don't buy a lot of Nintendo stuff.
I definitely buy a ton of Nintendo stuff, but there's always limits. Like we're saying before, Angelo, like we talked about Amiibo in your stream the other day. Like, yes, I like Amiibo as a concept, but I've told myself if I'm going to do anything Amiibo, the only thing I'm going to get is Zelda Amiibo. I'm at least going to get Amiibo that I'm going to personally enjoy as someone who's a big fan of Zelda. Like Switch games, for example, like I notoriously in this cast do not like Pokemon. I don't really buy any of the Pokemon games, even though they're like core Nintendo staples, because I just know I'll just literally never play them. Whereas at least the vast majority of other Nintendo purchases that I make, I know that I'm at least going to play them, if not like with myself or with other people, like in some type of co-op or party mode or whatever it is. I don't know. It's just, it's a weird one, right? Like, this, I think there's always limits to anything. And I feel like the way that this OLED Switch is marketed as a pro version of the Switch is really for the people who are hardcore into Switch. But I feel like at the same time, a lot of those people are very picky, as we've just discussed, around what they do and don't purchase. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
I think you'll find, Michael, this is not a pro version of the Switch. This is the O version of the Switch.
Oh, my God.
I will say, Michael, just to pull you up on something there, you say you'll only buy Amiibo that are
okay,
in the Zelda
hold
series.
On, okay. And Animal Crossing.
I'm pretty sure. Did your EB card, EB account not get flagged for buying many Amiibo cards?
I didn't buy that many Amiibo cards. I actually don't know why I got flagged so hard. That's on EB Games. That was hilarious, though.
I have all the Smash Amiibo. I have all the Amiibo except the gold and silver colored Marios and the giant yarn Yoshi. I also don't have the weird gold colored Mega Man or Shovel Knight because I think they look completely tacky. But I have every other Amiibo apart from that. And initially, when I first saw them at E3 with the pea colored stick, you know, under Link and all that, I was like, you know what? No, I don't need this. I had my Disney Infinity stuff. I didn't need an entire another series of Amiibo. And I was in the US when they came out, and I was walking through a Toys R Us, and they just had a massive wall of Mario and Peach and a few of the others. And I sort of saw them in person. I just went, yeah, why not? I'll get these ones. That'll sort of cover me. And then, you know, that opened up the rabbit hole. And now I've got so many of them, I'm like, I really should get the whole set because, you know, I don't want to get 98% of them. But my thing with all these sort of limited editions and everything else is, I mean, I'm very, very fortunate that I get a lot of games provided to me from publishers. So it's very rare for me to actually buy a game these days. And the last one I actually did buy was the NES re-release of Fire Emblem last year. And that was purely because it came with like an acrylic NES cartridge, which in person looks incredible. And I just sort of thought, that's actually going to be one of those pieces. You know, if you put it in a cabinet with glassware or something, it would look like it belongs there. So that was the reason I got that. I'm not a Fire Emblem fan. I haven't played the game. I don't care about the art book, but that acrylic NES cartridge was something that appealed to me. So, but like with collector's editions as a whole, I tend to avoid them now because 90% of what you get is like one key item, and they generally are crap. To put it in a nice way, like for a while there, like Call of Duty, you know, you're getting night vision goggles with Call of Duty, and then Batman Arkham Knight was going to have a collector's edition that had an actual remote controlled Batmobile car, and that ended up getting canned. There was a Mass Effect Andromeda collector's edition that had a remote controlled car from that one. I can't remember what they call it in the game.
Mako.
No, well, whatever they call it in Andromeda, but that thing, there was going to be a remote control version of that. And so they kept, you know, collector's editions kept going from being, instead of just being like an extra art book or maybe a CD selection, it was, you start getting all these extra, you know, collectible figurines and statues. And THQ now are putting out $600 editions of games that come with massive statues. And
I was going to make that point, yeah.
Yeah.
The collector's edition doesn't even come with the game. Like,
buy the game and then buy the collector's stuff like on the side. It's super weird.
Nintendo in Japan will let you buy all the collector's edition stuff for cheaper without the game. You buy the game digitally yourself. So, you know, a lot of this stuff has been evolving over the years where it's becoming just, there's so much extra crap that comes along with buying a game, you know, all the options. Like we joke about, you know, digital deluxe editions and, you know, premium editions and gold editions. I mean, there was a thing in the Discord the other day about Immortal Phoenix Rising.
Immortals.
With the number of versions of editions that were out in order to get all the DLC and everything. And this is the same sort of stuff. Is Nintendo say, hey, we're going to release this item. And you go, okay, cool. And then it'll be like, yeah, but it's got one thing you want and a bunch of stuff you don't want. Or, you know, there's one thing here that's cool. You know, and the Amiibo.
Well, this unlocks like a vital quality of life feature that you can't get any other way.
Yeah. So, no. I mean, I...
Just an example.
I finished Skyward Sword and... Obviously, the Amiibo only came out after I was done for my review. So I didn't use that feature. I have the Amiibo. It's in the box, and I'm probably never going to open it because I don't need it. But I needed the Amiibo to complete my collection. but I wasn't going to use it for the actual game. So, and I'm not going to replay the game having just finished it, just so I can make use of that functionality. So my thing with all this sort of stuff is that it's come down to the point where I can only justify buying something myself if it has something I really want, and not because it's got so much extra stuff thrown in just because it looks cool to have 9 items instead of 2. That's a big tangent.
I will say, like, my general rule of thumb and, like, my advice for people that do sort of have this thing where they'll buy a lot of stuff from a company and then realize that they're not really enjoying. If you do want to break out of that, like, first of all, don't pre-order anything. You shouldn't pre-order games anyway. There's just, you know, unless it's like a limited run games, but that's a whole other thing.
Unless it's an availability issue.
Yeah, unless it's an availability issue, like, just don't pre-order games. It's just not worth it. Think about, like, if you're actually going to enjoy it before you put it in the car. Like, there have been so many times where I've, like, gone to buy something and then just before I hit the buy button, I'm like, well, I'm never going to use this. I'm never going to play this. I'm never going to, you know, open up this amiibo and touch it to my thing in gameplay. Like, that's just not going to happen. Like, think about those things. And also, like, read reviews. Find a reviewer that, like, I know that, like, not all reviews are going to be useful for every person. But find a reviewer who generally matches up with your tastes and your likes and dislikes. And read their reviews on things like this. Or, you know, talk to your friends about, you know, wait a little bit and talk to friends who have played it and see what they think. Because it is really easy to get trapped in that. Like, you know, I'll buy it because I liked the last one. Or, you know, I'll buy it because, you know, this company made a thing that I really liked in the past. But, like, honestly, like, it you end up buying a lot of just crap that you don't really need or want or use in any way. So those would be my 3 tips.
I will counteract your pre-order statement with this little caveat. The fact that, like, EB Games and JB Hi-Fi, to an extent, because you can pre-order and then pay it off over time, if you're somebody who sticks to a budget, that is a very handy way of getting a game without having to drop $100 on release day, so to speak. So, if that is something that you prefer to do, I say pre-order for that reason alone, just because it's the reverse layout. Like,
but also, like, you can just, like, put $10 aside each paycheck and do the same.
There's 100 other ways to, like, do that. You know, I'm not saying, like, the temptation to do it.
You're going
to
spend that money in the meantime. But, yeah, just, you know, think about the things that you're buying.
Yeah. But, I mean, in terms of, you know, buying things purely because they're Nintendo, I've gone out of that now. I used to do it years ago. Especially working, when I was working at AB Games, it was so easy to see stuff coming in, the deliveries, and you go, oh, that's a shiny box. I wonder what that is. And, you know, you're looking, yeah, why not? It's here. Why not? I'll get it. I don't do that anymore, purely because I don't have time to play everything. And B, I've gotten to the point, as I said before, where I only want the stuff that I really want to have. And Amiibo are my little guilty pleasure, where I'm just getting them because I have all of them so far.
All right, we have to move on for time. So to wrap things up in that regard, if you want to read what the wider Vox crew think about the Switch OLED model, there is an article up called Our Thoughts on the Nintendo Switch OLED Model. You can find it in on Vox.net on the main site there, or you can just check the show notes. I link all the relevant articles in every episode as we go.
In that article, I just will say I would very much encourage people to pay close attention to Paul's words in there, because he is probably the person who benefits the most from the OLED Switch, and he's probably the most negative about it. So definitely pay attention to him, because I think he has some really good points.
I'll also say I'm very disappointed to see that OLED model is not in parentheses in this article, and I will be pulling people up on this.
All right, we'll get into the Fortnite forecast. I think we should skip the games we're playing at the moment for this episode, because we're way over time here.
Yeah.
So quickly getting into the Fortnite forecast. So between today, the 18th of July, and the next date of recording, the 1st of August, on July 20, we've got Akiba's Trip, Hellbound and Debriefed coming to Switch. We've got Chris Tales as well. On July 21st, we have Pokemon Unite, the big MOBA that is coming to Switch. On July 22, we've got Last Stop. July 27, we've got The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles and Neo, The World Ends With You. Woo. And Samurai Warriors 5. So, big weeb day right there.
We'll have reviews for at least 2 of those.
And on July 29, we have Master Blaster 03 and Fuga, Melodies of Steel.
I will jump in here. So, with Samurai Warriors 5, there is a demo coming out on Tuesday for that. with progress being carried across to the full game. So if you are somebody who wants to give that a go, you can do the demo and you don't have to restart if you get the full game.
All right, so skipping past games we're playing, let's get right into Nintendo 20 questions, which is Luke's moment to shine. So take it away, Luke.
Yes, you may begin your questioning.
So no preamble, right into it.
We're cut for time, people.
Was the game released after 2010?
After 2010? No.
Okay,
was this game released after 2000?
No.
Is this game released after 1990?
Yes.
So it's a 90s game. Okay. Is this game a...
The NES, SNES 64.
Is this game a 3D game?
Or a 3D game? No.
Okay, so what's that? Five questions?
Yeah. That's four. Okay, so NES, SNES, or either of the Game Boys.
Are there any 2D games on 64?
Oh, yeah, like Mischief Makers and stuff.
Yeah, okay, let's just leave that to the
one
side.
One of the Mega Man games as well. Is this on a home console?
Yes. So that is five.
Super Nintendo, presumably.
Or late NES.
Like Super late NES, like Yoshi's Cookie or whatever.
Did this game have multiplayer?
No.
Single player only. So it's not a Super Mario game.
Interesting.
It's not a Mario Kart. Not a Diddy Kong. Mm. Or Donkey Kong. Is this a puzzle game?
A puzzle game? No.
Mm.
Okay.
Is this an RPG?
An RPG? No.
Hmm. That's a large amount of SNES games in the bin right there.
I want to ask if it's a platformer, but like I'm worried that...
Let's ask if it has any Nintendo characters. Does this feature any prominent Nintendo characters?
Yes.
Okay. So it probably is a platformer in that case.
Probably, because I can't think of any prominent Nintendo characters that aren't... that aren't of things that we've already eliminated or platformer. Although we could be writing ourselves into a corner.
Well, it has to be single player. It's a single player 2D game that's on a console that has prominent Nintendo characters. It's not an RPG.
Could be Kirby?
Could be Kirby.
Yeah, I can't really think of much else.
How many questions is that?
You're on 9.
Okay.
Should we like narrow down the console? Because it's got to be the NES or SNES.
Okay.
Is this a Super Nintendo game?
Yes, it is. That is 10.
Okay. Okay, so it's a prominent... What are the big... I'm just trying to think of characters in Smash at this point.
Zelda. You have Metroid.
Sephiroth.
Does Yoshi's Island have multiplayer? It doesn't, does it?
I don't think so. You got to see.
No, it doesn't.
So should we ask if it's a platformer then? Because otherwise it could be an adventure game like Zelda, because it's not an RPG.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think that's a good question.
Is this a platformer?
No.
Whoa! Okay. So we're super narrow now. Like we've eliminated so many games. We've just not like focused down on a specific type.
Okay. So, I mean, if it's Zelda though, then like it's literally just a Link to the Past, isn't it? Like there weren't any other SNES.
No. That's way like too obvious, though.
Games.
Like, no way someone like doing Zelda.
I didn't say it, but I will point out this is not a user suggestion.
It's not not Zelda.
So it's something super obscure that only Luke knows. All right. So what does only
So I've got a
Luke
feeling
know?
That it contains a prominent Nintendo character, but it's not developed by Nintendo.
Kind of got that feeling as well, but like, were they really licensing out their characters that much in like the late 90s?
I mean, there's like Mario Paint, but...
I mean, it could be Mario Paint.
Is Mario's miss? That's not on SNES, right? It's PC.
Mario, is it?
I can't even remember.
I think there was a version of it that was on the Super Nintendo.
Okay. Can't be Mario RPG then.
All right, should we ask if it's developed by Nintendo?
Yeah. Cool.
All right, was this game developed by Nintendo?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
So what's a non-platformer game that features Nintendo characters? That was in 2D.
Okay, so we've got
the Super Nintendo.
A Link to the Past. We've got Mario Paint.
It's Mario Paint. I'll be so happy.
I really hope it is Mario Paint.
F-Zero doesn't have multiplayer, does it?
That's a good point.
Don't
is he a prominent Nintendo?
So, yeah.
I mean, he's popular in Smash, I guess.
I haven't played F-Zero. Is it like a 3D or a 2D game?
I would say it's 2D. I wouldn't classify Mode 7.
I'm not counting anything the pseudo 3D stuff as 3D.
It's as 3D as Mario Kart.
The only 3D games I would count from the SNES era would be Star Fox and Stunt Race.
Yeah, the Super FX games. I mean, technically Yoshi's Island, or whatever it is 3D. They use a Super FX, and there are 3D objects that fall.
Yeah, but they look
just
real
a little
bad.
Technicality.
But you can't move around on three dimensions, which is what I would assume a 3D game
to. Those blocks did. There were three dimensions when they.
Okay. So I think in this particular case, we do need to like narrow down the genre.
How many questions are we up to?
You would be on 13.
Right.
This would be your 13th, sorry.
We're doing all right. We've got six more, I guess. So that's okay.
Star Fox has multiplayer, right? So it can't be Star Fox.
Well, it's 3D as well.
I guess, yes, technically it's 3D. So we've got F-Zero, Zelda. What are we missing?
Mario Paint.
Mario Paint, yes, sorry.
Could ask if there's combat.
Oh, that's a good one, actually.
Does this game have combat in it?
It does not.
Okay, it's not Zelda.
Could ask if it has racing. Could ask if it has
painting.
Would you
classify the kart stuff in F-Zero as combat?
You're not actively doing it. It's a byproduct of people hitting you. You're not actively going out and attacking.
Would we count like throwing shells at people in Mario Kart as combat?
I mean,
I mean, in my definition, you're actively engaging in that, so that would be a form of vehicular combat.
So, what if you just drop a banana, though?
You're still getting
really
telling the game to do something.
Right, so we're really down to F-Zero on Mario.
Pilot Wings.
Oh, that's a.
I mean, that's using the same technology, but it's. And it's not technically 3D, but
that's Mode 7. That's not Super FX. That's the same tech as Mario Kart.
But would you count that as 2D, though? Even though perspective-wise, you are moving in a 3D space.
I would count that as a 2D game.
Does Pilot Wings have a prominent Nintendo character, though? Is the Pilot Wings pilot a prominent Nintendo character?
Is Mario in it in any...
I said we're going to narrow down the genre, right?
Yeah, let's do that. We're going off track.
So what... So that's not combat, so let's roll out adventure, right? I would say the vast majority of adventure games have combat in them.
I think we've got three guesses so far, and they're probably all wrong, but we need to see if it is one of those. So we've got F-Zero, we've got Pilot Wings, and we've got Mario Paint. And I guess like Mario is missing or whatever it's called.
You could ask if it uses Mode 7, and that would give us either Pilot Wings or... F-Zero. I'm gonna do it. Does this game use Mode 7?
No.
So it's neither of those. So it can only be Mario Paint. Luke, is this game...
I thought, geez, he's confident.
Does this game feature Mario?
Feature Mario? It does not.
Oh my god. Oh man, what am I missing?
Are you missing something like super obvious?
It's Luigi Paint.
We've asked if it's a puzzle game, right?
You said no.
You did, and it is not.
It's none of the genres we've asked. So we don't know what the genre is.
Made what other by genres Nintendo. Are there?
That's a philosophical question. What are genres?
Was developed by Nintendo.
I'm going to have to be mean and start doing countdown timers.
Yeah, for sure. It can't be a racing game because they all used Mode 7 on the Super Nintendo, as far as I know.
Not all of them.
As far as I know.
The ones made by Nintendo did.
Okay. Well, this was made by Nintendo, wasn't it? So.
You asked if it was developed by Nintendo, and it is.
Yeah, so it's not Mode 7 in that case.
It doesn't feature Mario. I have absolutely no idea. What about the Kirby golf game? What's that called?
Kirby's Dream Course.
Yeah, we could ask if it's Kirby.
But that has multiplayer, right?
Oh, it does, yeah. Okay, that's a good
idea. Should we ask if it was earlier or later in the gen?
I don't really... Like, that wouldn't help me. I don't know if it'll help you guys, but I don't really know what came at the start and the end of the Super Nintendo era, so...
Super Nintendo would have been 1990. That's when it released in Japan and the US, and it would have ended when the 64 came out, so 96. So we could say if it came out in the latter half or the first half of the gen.
Yeah. That's all right.
Did this game come out in the second half of the Super Nintendo generation?
It did not.
No, what?
It's an early one. It's the first 3 years. So it's not a Kirby game in that case. It's very unlikely to be a Kirby game, at least.
Yeah. Unless I'm thinking of Kirby game. Nah, there's nothing there.
100%. This is an obscure Luke game. You've it's probably like...
Two questions and then a guess.
It's that Miyamoto devil game or something, right? Demon game.
Man, I just can't think of anything that would have a prominent Nintendo character. There was no, like, Kid Icarus or...
How many... Oh, I don't know if I want to use this as a question.
What's the question?
Is it a Super Scope game?
A Super Scope game?
No, wait, I wasn't asking the question. That cool down to my partners in crime. Calm down.
I mean, we asked if it was combat and using the scope.
Yeah, that was scope. I was combat. Yeah, I'm an idiot.
Because you're shooting stuff.
But, like, I just can't think of any like non-combat games that were made by Nintendo apart from the first Mario half.
What Super Nintendo? What characters were there? I mean, there wasn't even a Donkey Kong Country around that time, so that would be out. Yoshi? Maybe it is. No. Wait, did we say if it was a platformer or not?
Did we ask? Yeah, we did. We asked if it was a platformer. Yeah, you said you did.
All right, so it's not a platformer.
What else is there?
Oh my god.
On the Super Nintendo, there were only puzzlers, shooters, racers, and platformers.
And RPGs.
It could be a puzzler, but then like, did we ask about puzzles?
I think we did, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You did?
And it is not. Yeah.
That was like the third question.
Oh my god, I'm so stuck.
You're doing us dirty here, Luke. Damn it. All right. Two more minutes, and we wrap this up.
I was going to ask if it's on the Super Nintendo, Nintendo Switch Online app.
Oh.
I feel like that's most Nintendo Super Nintendo games at this point, apart from Earthbound.
You could.
It's fine by me if you want to ask it.
I mean, it's not going to hurt your chances at this point.
All right.
You need to ask something.
Is this on the Super Nintendo Switch Online app?
No, it is not.
So baited.
Okay. It's not going to hurt our chances, he says. Directly hurts our chances.
I mean, it's not going to hurt you if you ask a question because you need to ask questions.
Well, I don't know.
We need to take a stab in the dark and ask what character is in it in that case. So we can rule out Kirby. We can rule out Fox McCloud. We can rule out Donkey Kong. We can rule out Captain Falcon. Can rule out Link and any Zelda characters. Can rule out Yoshi. That really only leaves us with like Mario.
But Mario is not in it. So we already asked if he was in it. And
yeah, so that rules out Mario. So what else is there?
If, I don't know, some like obscure Super Nintendo prototype for Luigi's Mansion that we've never heard of.
Like one question and a guess. So
can't be Samus because. She was only in one game.
Combat and all of those.
You rule out Kirby, yeah?
I'd say so, because Kirby was only in the latter half of the gen, right? Like, or maybe there was a Kirby's Dream Land or something.
No, I think in most
things. Wasn't there like...
Yeah. I'm like...
I really have nothing.
This is going to be another one of those things totally where it's either going to be some obscure thing and we're all going to hate Luke and it's going to be totally okay, or it's going to be something super obvious and we're going to hate ourselves.
Yeah. All right. We didn't ask if it was a racing game. We could just ask it's a racing game.
Yeah, or a puzzle.
Is this a racing game?
I don't know why I keep going back to puzzles.
Luke, is this a racing game? It is not.
Yeah, no. We don't know then.
Genre is like, I cannot think of anything.
Let's throw it in. We don't know this one.
We only have a guess, right?
I mean, you've got to make a guess.
Oh, we have a guess. We could say Mario is missing because then we say like, you know, it doesn't have Mario in it because he's missing.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I don't know. We don't have anything else to guess here. So
there's literally nothing else that I can guess.
You know, it's this game Mario is missing.
Is this Mario is missing? It is not. And to point it out, you the way you asked the question was, does this feature Mario prominently? Was how you asked that question initially.
Yeah.
Released in 1992 here in Australia, released in 1991 in Japan, developed by Nintendo, it is SimCity.
What?
Because it features Bowser as the big bad monster that crashes through your city.
Oh my God, that developed by Nintendo?
Oh, yep. It's the only game in the SimCity series not made by Maxis.
It was developed by Nintendo. Do you know what? I hate myself even more because I thought about SimCity. Totally, I was like, no, it was developed by Maxis. What? I'm an idiot. Why would I even think of SimCity?
Look, I said it was going to be some obscure thing that Luke knew the art, that Luke would have known. And I was 100% correct. Luke was the only one that knew that that was developed by Nintendo. My mind was nowhere near SimCity whatsoever.
It was the second time SimCity was ever released. The original one was on PC, developed by Maxis.
To be fair, and I feel like... Oh, go on.
I was going to say, it's also where Dr. Wright, the green-haired little assist trophy in Smash Brothers, comes from, based on Will Wright.
Yeah. Look, I don't think SimCity was an unfair choice. I feel like we just went about digging very incorrectly.
Because when you ask the question, does it feature like a prominent Nintendo character? It's like, yes, Bowser. And you guys just kept with Mario. You kept with all the heroes. You completely ignored the baddies.
Well, I wouldn't have. I never played SimCity on the Super Nintendo, so I would not have known that Bowser
was in there. So. I have played it.
The worst part is that I did play SimCity.
It makes me angry.
And like quite a lot as a child too. No, we just like dug in the complete wrong direction.
Huh? Yeah. It also, the Super Nintendo version of SimCity also was the one to introduce specialist buildings and all that sort of stuff, which is now a staple of the series.
We needed to dig up, stupids. Oh, well.
But at least it was a game that people recognized.
Yeah, that's fine.
I thought you were having to dig at me. I was like, damn you.
I dare our listeners to tell us whether or not, whether they actually knew that was SimCity. They're going, following along, and in their heads, they're like, this is SimCity. No liars. See, no liars here.
Please tell us in the Discord if you knew before we guessed.
One of the questions that I really honestly thought you would have asked was this a licensed game? And it was.
Oh, but like once we figured out it was developed by Nintendo, we figured it
probably was developed by Nintendo.
This is before that question. Because Nintendo generally don't license other people's properties. So that would have narrowed it down a little bit. But yeah, I don't. I love that SimCity game. So I thought now that it's my turn, I will throw that one out there.
Ah, very good. Very good. That was on us.
It's your turn next time, isn't it, Andrew?
No, it's Michael. It's Michael's turn.
Oh, it's Michael. All right. Give us a real easy
one. Oh, I don't have to make a choice. Do I get revenge on Luke or do I make it an easy one?
That about wraps up this week's Bookcast. Be sure to head to the website www.books.net for all your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. To keep up to date, follow the site on Twitter at books.net, all spelled out, or jump on over to our Discord at bit.ly/booksdiscord. Ollie, where can people find you?
You can find me in said Discord or on Twitter at Chocobalt, Chocobalt.
And Luke?
You can find me in the Discord. I'm always there. Or you can find me over at maxigeek.com.
And Michael?
You can also find me on the Discord and on Twitter at subelement. It's SubElement.
I'm so jealous that you guys are so easy to find on all the socials. Mine is so stupid. So you can find me in the Discord group at Mangelo. You can find me on Twitter with the same name but with a zero at the end instead of an O. Thanks to the original holder of the at Mangelo handle. We won't give it up. And on Twitch at Mangelo Show without the zero. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next fortnight. Bye-bye.